behind, I want to thank you very much on my behalf and also on behalf of architecture. Anyway, perhaps you can put the PowerPoint. The House of Ill Repute is a paper which is actually the story of an obsession of Le Corbusier with a house by a woman, Eileen Gray, but also the story of my own obsession with this story, with this obsession. So, in fact, it's an obsession about an obsession that goes back at least a decade, 12 years exactly. Last summer, I went back to the Le Corbusier Foundation in Paris to dig a little bit deeper into the archives, and ultimately I want to do a film, a documentary on this story. Some people may have thought that I was exaggerating in my reading of this story of Le Corbusier. I don't mind exaggerating, but what I discovered in the archives is that, if anything, I hadn't gone far enough. So, in the meantime, I have to start from the beginning, particularly for those unfamiliar with the story. So, let me see how this works. E1027 is the name of this house. It's a modern white house, as you can see, whose walls are riddled with bullet holes, and is perched on these rocks, 100 feet, more or less 100 feet above the Mediterranean Sea, in a remote place in Roquebrun, Calmartin. The site is was, in Eileen Gray's words, when she chose it, inaccessible and not overlooked from anywhere. No road leads to the house. It was designed and built by Eileen Gray. Let me see if I have a picture. Here is Eileen Gray. For Gian Badovici, the editor of L'Archive Tourbillon, a very important architectural publication of the time, and herself between 1926 and 1929. In fact, this is the publication that L'Archive Tourbillon did of E1027. In fact, Eileen Gray did not only design the house, she actually went down to the site and lived in the place and worked on the site for 12 years when the house was under construction, but she also designed absolutely everything about the house, the furniture, the carpets, the light fixtures, the mirrors, the window shutters, the screens, everything. They all became prototypes of what is now her very well-known furniture. And here are some examples also of the window shutters and the famous satellite mirror. Okay, sorry, I have to go back here. She named the house E1027. E is for the E in Eileen. 10 is for J, the 10th letter of the alphabet, the J of Jan Badovici. 2 is for the B of Badovici, and 7 is for G. They both live in this house most of the summer months until Gray built her own house nearby in Castellar in 1934. After the death of Badovici in 1956, the house was sold to the Swiss architect Marie-Louise Selbert. It was her who found the walls of the house completely riddled with bullet holes. The house had been clearly the site of some considerable violence. In a 1969 letter, she comments on the state of the house and says, "Corbu, that is Le Corbusier, did not want anything repaired and urged me to leave it as it was as a reminder of the war." End of the quote. So what kind of war are we talking about? Most obviously, it was World War II. That is, the bullet holes are actually wounds from the German occupation. But what violence was there to this house before the bullets and even before the inevitable relationship between modern architecture and the military? And anyway, to start with, let's start with a simple question. What is Le Corbusier doing here, advising Marie-Louise Selbert on what to do with this house? What brings him to this isolated spot, this remote house that will eventually become the site of his own death in 1965? In a coffee table book on Le Corbusier, I read that as a young man, he had traveled to the Balkans and the Near East, and he had made sketches of strange, inaccessible places and scenes, and it was perhaps through a natural anti-romantic reaction of maturity that later, as a purist, he proposed to paint what was duplicable and near at hand. Here, of course, are some examples of purist paintings. Strange as it may seem, in order to find out what Le Corbusier is doing in this site, in this isolated house, advising Marie-Louise Selbert, we will have to go back to Le Corbusier's earlier travels, to these strange and inaccessible places and scenes that he had conquered through drawing, or so he claimed. And in the meantime, I should clarify that these strange, inaccessible places are not just houses or cities, but also sexual scenes, as can be seen in these drawings from 1917 by Le Corbusier. In particular, we will have to go back to Le Corbusier's trip to Algiers in the spring of 1931. This will be his first encounter in what will become a long relationship to the city, or in Le Corbusier's words, 12 years of uninterrupted study of Algiers. And those are postcards that he still has in the archives from this moment. By all accounts, this study began with his drawings of Algerian women, and also collected these postcards. He said later that he had been profoundly seduced by a type of woman particularly well-built, of which he made many nude studies. He also acquired a huge collection of postcards representing naked women surrendered by the accoutrements of the Oriental Bazaar. And here are some of these examples of his postcards. He made many drawings after these postcards as well. Jean de Maisonsul, who was later became the director of the Beaux-Arts Museum in Algiers, but then was an 18-year-old boy who was asked to accompany Le Corbusier through the Casbah, and later in his life he records their tour. He says, "Our wanderings through the street led us at the end of the day to the Rue Cataruzzi, where he," that is Le Corbusier, "was fascinated by the beauty of two young girls, one Spanish and the other one Algerian. They brought us up a narrow stairway to their room, where he sketched some nudes on, to my amazement, some schoolbook graph paper with color pencils. The sketches of the Spanish girl lying both alone on the bed and beautifully grouped together with the Algerian turned out to be accurate and realistic, but he said that they were very bad and refused to show them." End of the quote. Le Corbusier apparently filled like about 3 notebooks of sketches in Algiers, which he later claimed that they were stolen from his atelier. But Ossanfan, his friend and partner, Amadé Ossanfan, publishing partner in L'Esprit Nouveau, denies it, saying that Le Corbusier himself had either destroyed these notebooks or hide them, considering them a secret of the atelier. Of course, the Algerian sketches and postcards appear to be a rather ordinary instance of the ingrained mode of a fetishistic appropriation of women of the East and of the other. But Le Corbusier, as Stanislav von Moss have noted, turned this material into preparatory studies for a projected monumental figure composition, the plans for which preoccupied Le Corbusier during many years, if not his entire life. From the months immediately following his return from Algiers up to his death, Le Corbusier seems to have made hundreds and hundreds of sketches on yellow tracing paper by laying it over the original sketches and retracing the contours of the figures. Ossanfan again believed that Le Corbusier had redrawn his own sketches with the help of photographs and postcards. He also studied extensively, he became completely obsessed, with Delacroix's famous painting, Femme d'Algiers, producing also a series of sketches of the outlines of the figures in this painting, divested, of course, of their exotic clothing and the surrounding decor. And this is the amazing thing, that soon the two projects, the project of redrawing his own sketches and the project of redrawing this painting, became one. So he starts modifying the gestures in Delacroix's figures, gradually making them to correspond to the figures in his own sketches. He said he would have called the final composition Femme de la Casbah, but in fact he never finished it. He kept drawing and redrawing. At that point there are even sketches that demonstrate that he planned this mural to be in color. Of course, the drawings and the redrawings of this image had become a lifetime obsession, already indicates that something was at stake. This becomes even more obvious when in 1963-64, that is shortly before his death, Le Corbusier, unhappy, listen to this, unhappy with the visible aging of the yellow tracing paper, copies a selection of about 26 drawings onto transparent paper, and symptomatically for somebody who kept absolutely everything, burns the rest. So he burns his original sketches. To really appreciate this, you have to understand that Le Corbusier will go down the beach in 1920 and will pick up a cell, and that cell has a number now in the Fondation Le Corbusier, and that he make a doodle in a napkin, that napkin has a, and that his laundry bills of the 20s are in the Fondation Le Corbusier, his telephone bills. I mean, you can reconstruct the whole history of this person. But anyway, the process of, so it's very symptomatic then to burn these sketches that had occupied him for his entire life. But the process of drawing and redrawing the Femme de la Casbah had reached already its most intense, if not hysterical, moment when Le Corbusier's studies found their way into a mural that he completed in 1938 in the house of Eileen Gray in Eton 27. Le Corbusier referred to the mural as Sous le pilotis, or graffiti at Calmartin, and sometimes it's also called Three Women. According to Marie-Louise Selbert, Le Corbusier used to explain to his friends that Badovici, was depicted on the right. His friend Eileen Gray was on the left, and the outline of the the outline of the head and the hairpiece of the sitting figure in the middle, he claimed, was their desired child who was never born. So this is, of course, this is the desired child that was never born. Of course, this extraordinary scene is not only an effacement of Gray's architecture, but perhaps also an effacement of her sexuality, since her relationship to Badovici, notwithstanding, Gray was openly lesbian. But of course, inasmuch as Badovici is here represented as one of the three women, the mural may reveal as much as it conceals. The whole question, the whole affair, in fact, is really a theme for a psychiatrist. I find myself completely unable to fully understand this. Particularly, I think it's a theme for a psychiatrist, particularly if we take into account Le Corbusier's obsessive relationship to this house as manifest, and this is only an example of a very complicated pathology, of his occupation of the site immediately after World War II, when he built for himself a small wooden sack, a cabanon, this is 3.5 meters by 3.5 meters, at the very limit to the property right behind Eileen Gray's, overlooking the house of Eileen Gray. He occupied and controlled the site precisely by overlooking it. Let me show you some pictures of this cabanon, who is now perfectly restored, and a monument, a French national monument, when the house of Eileen Gray is completely a disaster, abandoned, vandalized. It's quite interesting what is happening, no? She has binoculars and also what's going on here, you know, so it's all... And later he built a second cabanon, also extremely small for his work, also completely in the limit of the property of Eileen Gray, just overlooking her house, and this is where he is working. So he occupied and controlled this site by overlooking it, the cabin being little more than an observation platform, a sort of watchdog house. Watchdog house is how Eileen Gray described it. The imposition of this appropriating gaze is even more brutal if you remember that Eileen Gray had chosen this house because the site was inaccessible and not overlooked from anywhere else. But the violence of this occupation had already been established when Le Corbusier painted the murals in this house. There were 8 altogether. I'm going to show you now these murals that were, of course, painted without the permission of Eileen Gray, who had already moved out from living with Badovici. She considered it an act of vandalism, indeed, as her biographer Peter Adam put it, it was rape. A fellow architect, a man that she admired, had, without her consent, defaced her design. These are some pictures of Le Corbusier in front of one of the mirrors with his friend, with his wife Yvonne. Because this is another interesting thing, which is the defacement of this house went hand in hand with the effacement of Eileen Gray as an architect. When Le Corbusier published the murals in his complete works in 1946, and in a specialist of L'Archive Tour d'Aujourd'hui in 1948, Eileen Gray House is referred to as a house in Cadmartin. Her name is not even mentioned. Not only that, but he keeps rearranging himself with his wife in front of the of these murals, and here with Badovici, and who knows why he colored his own picture. He ended up getting credit not only for the design, for the murals, but also for the design of the house, and even for some of the furniture. There is an Italian magazine that suggested that he has designed also the furniture. Still today, the confusion continues, with so many writers attributing the house to Badovici, or at best to Badovici and Gray, and some still suggesting that Le Corbusier had collaborated on the projects. Collaboration. Even more sad, Eileen Gray doesn't figure even as a footnote in most histories of modern architecture, and that includes the most recent and ostensibly critical ones. What a narrow prison you have built for me over a number of years, and particularly this year through your vanity, Badovici wrote to Le Corbusier in 1949 about the whole episode in a letter that Peter Adam thinks that may have been dictated by Eileen Gray herself. Le Corbusier replied in a way that makes it very clear that he is replying to Eileen Gray. You want a statement from me based on my worldwide authority to show, if I correctly understand your innermost thoughts, to demonstrate the quality of pure and functional architecture which is manifested by you in the house at Cadmartin and has been destroyed by my pictorial interventions? Okay, you send me some photographic documents of this manipulation of pure functionalism, and by the way, send me also some documents on Castellar, this U-boat, this submarine of functionalism. I put the other images before. This is the other house that Eileen Gray had built near Carmatan, in Castellar. The house that Le Corbusier is also asking for images. And then I will spread the debate in front of the whole world. So now Le Corbusier was threatening to carry what had been this battle from the house into the newspapers and architectural periodicals. But his public position completely contradicted what he had expressed privately. In 1938, the same year that he will go on to paint the mural Graffiti at Cadmartin, Le Corbusier had written a letter to Eileen Gray after spending some days in 1827. He used to borrow the house frequently. And he writes this letter, where he not only acknowledged the authorship of Eileen Gray, but also how much he likes the house. He says, "I'm so happy to tell you how much these few days spent in your house have made me appreciate the rare spirit which has dictated all the disposition inside and outside and given to the modern furniture, the equipment, such dignified form, so charming, so full of spirit." End of the quote. Now, the question then is, why did Le Corbusier vandalize the very house he loved? And let me go back to some pictures that I found recently in the archives that are never published, right? Which are these ones that I have here of Le Corbusier working on the murals or taking a break from working in the murals in the house at Cadmartin, a house that he had borrowed for a few days and without permission of anybody. Paints 8 murals in it, and then gets upset when he says, why did you paint the murals? He threatens to bring it to the whole world. Well, anyway, why did Le Corbusier vandalize this house that he obviously loved so much? What did he have to say for himself? In the complete works, in the volume 4, 1946, he says, "Murals at Cadmartin, they are not painted on the best walls of the villa," he says. I mean, who has asked you? Who has asked anything, right? "On the contrary, they burst out from dull, sad walls where nothing is happening. The result, meaningful paintings on indifferent walls, and all the fine white walls are preserved." Okay. Then in the volume of 1948, he says, "I take some photographs of mural paintings done by your servant in a villa during the weeks preceding the mobilization of 1939. This villa," he says, well, I cut all this, but he says, "this villa that I have animated with my paintings was quite pretty." white inside, and could have well passed without my talent, right? The words chosen, he goes to say, to receive the nine big murals, they are eight, but never mind, were precisely the more tender ones, the more insignificant, right? So, okay. So if this beautiful villa could have passed without his talents, why did he paint it then? Did he really think that the murals will somehow enhance this villa, enhance the architecture? Certainly not. Le Corbusier had repeatedly stated that the role of the mural in architecture is to destroy the wall, to dematerialize it. In a letter to Madrid's Vladimir Nekrasov in 1932, he writes, "I accept the mural not to enhance a wall, but on the contrary, as a means to violently destroy the wall, to remove from it all sense of stability, of weight, etc." End of the quote. So the mural for Le Corbusier is a weapon against architecture, a bomb. But why then to paint on the walls at the risk of killing architecture? He asks himself on the same letter, and then he answers himself. It is when one is pursuing another task, that of telling stories. So what is the story that he so urgently needs to tell us with this graffiti at Kadmartam? Believe it or not, we will have to go back to Algiers once again. In fact, this amazing thing is that Le Corbusier's complimentary letter to Eileen Gray, sent from Camp Martin on the 28th of April of 1938, wears the letterhead Hotel Aleti, Algiers. Right? I mean, sure, we all carry letterheads from hotels, and probably have some notes here from a hotel I was in Montreal last night. But think again. Le Corbusier had been there in the early 30s. This is 1938. And this is when he would have done the sketches of the Algerian women. And now he goes down to the house, prepared to make this mural, and writes the note precisely in the letterhead of the hotel from Algiers. Le Corbusier's violation of Eileen Gray's house and history is consistent with his fetishization of Algerian women. One might even argue that the child in this mural reconstitutes the missing maternal phallus whose absence Freud argues organizes fetishism. In these terms, the endless drawings and redrawings is the scene of a violent substitution that in Le Corbusier would have seemed to require the house, that is domestic space, as a prop. Violence is organized around and through the house. In both circumstances, in Algiers and at Kadmartan, the scene begins with an intrusion, the carefully orchestrated occupation of a house, but the house is in the end effaced, erased from the Algiers drawings, defaced at Kadmartan. Significantly, Le Corbusier describes drawing itself as the occupation of a stranger's house. I've never seen a definition of drawing more strange than this. In his last book, Creation is a Patient Search, he writes, "By working with our hands, by drawing, we enter the house of a stranger. We are enriched by the experience. We learn." End of the quote. The sketches of the Algerian women were not only redrawings of life models, as Ozan Fan had already indicated, but I found in the archives, and of course in the archives of Le Corbusier, they have the postcards in one drawer and the drawings in another, so you have to do the matching, but it doesn't require a genius, that obviously something was absolutely right in what Ozan Fan had said, that they were actually done on the basis of postcards, as you can see. You can even argue that the construction of Algerian women in French postcards, in such French postcards, which were widely diffused at the time, would have informed Le Corbusier's life drawings. In that sense, you can say that he enters those pictures, that he inhabits the photographs. In fact, the whole mentality of the Femme de la Casbah drawings is photographic. Not only are they made from photographs, they are developed according to a repetitive process where the images are systematically reproduced on transparent paper. The grief of that original school graph paper allowing the image to be enlarged to any scale. This photographic sensibility becomes most obvious with the murals at Kadmartan. Traditionally, they have been understood as paradigm of Le Corbusier, the painter, the craftsman, detached from mechanical reproduction, an interpretation to which Le Corbusier himself has contributed with the circulation of these famous photographs of him naked working at one of the murals. I mean, do you realize that this is the only nudist image of Le Corbusier that we have? I mean, the other ones are deeply into the archives and they really don't like you to use them. This one, he himself published this big scar here. This big scar, he almost have died in this site already before when swimming in the sea, a boat passed over him. But what is normal, that is, but what is normally omitted from the graffiti at Karl Martin is that the mural itself was not conceived on the wall. Le Corbusier actually had used an electric projector to enlarge the image of a small drawing into the 250 by 4 meters wide wall where he etched the mural in black. They say that in using black, remember that he wanted to do it in color first, Le Corbusier was thinking about Picasso's Guernica of the year before, 1937, and that Picasso in his turn was so impressed with the murals at Cap Martin, apparently Le Corbusier managed to drag Picasso down there at a certain point, that he prompted him to do his own versions of the Femme d'Algiers. Apparently Picasso drew Delacroix's painting from memory and was frappéed to find out later that the figure that he had painted in the middle, lying down with her legs crossed, was not in Delacroix. It was, of course, graffiti at Cap Martin that he remembered, the reclining, cross-legged woman, inviting but inaccessible, Le Corbusier's symptomatic representation of Island Grey. But if Le Corbusier's mural had so impressed Picasso, how come that Picasso chose not to see that a swastika was inscribed into the chest of the woman on the right? The swastika may yet be one more sign of Le Corbusier's political opportunism. Remember that the mural was done in 1938. But the German soldiers who occupied the house during World War II may not have seen the swastika either, for it was this very wall that was found riddled with bullet holes, as if it had been the site of some execution. The mural was a black and white photograph. By drawing, Le Corbusier enters the photograph that is itself a stranger's house, occupying a retro-retaliation, the space, the city, the sexualities of the other by reworking the image. Drawing on and in photography is the instrument of colonization. The entry to the house of a stranger is always a breaking and an entry. There can be no entry without force, no matter how many invitations. Le Corbusier's architecture depends in some ways in specific techniques of occupying and yet gradually effacing the domestic space of the other. Like all colonists, Le Corbusier does not think of it as an invasion, of course, but as a gift. So when recapitulating his life work 5 years before his death, he symptomatically writes about Algiers and about Cap Martin in exactly the same terms. This is a book, My Work, where he goes through all the different years and what he has done. And when he gets to 1930 Algiers, he says, 1930 Algiers, 7 great schemes, 7 enormous studies, free of charge. And then you go through 1931, 1932, all the different things, nothing, nothing. We go to 1938, 39, 8 mural paintings, free of charge, in the Badovici and Helen Gray house in Cap Martin. So now he even spells her name incorrectly, Helen with an H and Gray with an E rather than an A. No charge for the discharge. Gray was outraged. Now even her name had been defaced, and renaming is, after all, the first act of colonization. Such gifts cannot be returned. But who is this gift for? Anyway, certainly not for Eileen Gray. The gift was for Le Corbusier himself. Effacing her gives him his identity. This can be seen in the obsessive attempt that he had to keep his own gift. So after the death of Badovici, who died without a will, the house passed to a Romanian sister of his who was quite old and was living in Bucharest and who had given powers to the American Adventists that were taking care of her. Le Corbusier started this extraordinary campaign to control the destiny of the house. He wrote over 100 elaborate letters and notes to the pastor in charge of selling the house, to friends in Switzerland trying to arrange for a suitable buyer, to a notary in Cap Martin trying to establish the value of the house and against the pastor's request for 30 millions, to the director of Espadem requesting that he write a threatening letter to the pastor advising him of Le Corbusier's intentions to make the preservation of the mural a condition, to the eventual buyer of the house, to this Swiss architect architect Marie-Louise Selbert, advising her on what to do and what not to do with the house, including precise instructions about how the house has to be bought with cash only, and that she had to come with a suitcase with all the money in cash, and that she should bring a hat. I mean, by the time the poor woman got the notice, it was a Saturday, the banks were closed. She went around to all her friends and collected all the money and put it in a suitcase and arrived in Kalmartan. And then she throws a tantrum because she forgot the hat. I mean, with all this money that she had, the poor woman had forgotten the hat I think is forbidden. The letters are sometimes three and more pages long and include drawings as sketches and photographs explaining in excruciating detail how extraordinary the house and its location is, the neighboring house, the beach, the other beach, the station connecting it to Bordeaux, to Paris, to Frankfurt, to Geneva, to Gines, to Rome, every detail of everyday life down to the perfect cuisine at L'Étoile de Mar, the restaurant immediately above Eaton 27, about eating in the sun on the terrace of Roberto, the owner of L'Étoile de Mar, the tone in crescendo, he starts sounding more and more like a tourist brochure. Voilà la question, Boisseger, he says to his publisher, the Swiss publisher Boisseger. Cap Martin, Rock of Rome for Christmas, New Year's, Easter, winter and summer. It is this part of the Mediterranean that is called Mediterranean climate. It is accessible by wagon lead, by the big international roads, by aeroplane, in direct contact by three routes, but here the tranquility of the isolation, with Nice, Antibes, Cannes, Menton, Gines, Torino, Milan. Here I put on I sleep and nothing else for weeks. Boisseger, make photostats of this letter. Send it to your friends. Show it to your friends. Do it quickly. I'm going to jump in the water right now. He tries to convince Boisseger that because it was very difficult to find somebody that would have so much money to buy the house, to form a group of three or four people from Zurich who could buy the house together. Ostensibly, of course, he's trying to save the murals at every cost, but on the way, he's also expressing his immense love for the place and for the house. Most remarkably, a recurring theme from all these letters is the fear that the house could be turned into a house of ill repute, into a bordello. It is very hard for me to imagine the idea that a modest modern house by the sea in a very expensive piece of property surrounded by incredibly luxurious villas could be turned into a brothel. But Le Corbusier keeps repeating this idea obsessively in numerous letters to all kinds of people. If the filthy beasts install a bordello in this house, they will destroy the eight mural paintings. If your blue buys, then they will be safe. To the pastor and to the notary, he claims in different letters to be trying to preserve the house and the garden and to avoid that it falls in the hands of James Equivoque, say the people, right? Insisting that by contrast, the people he's trying to organize to buy the house represent the most impeccable quality, honesty, understanding of the problem, desire to preserve this predator, modest but coquette, for spending the weekend or holidays of every kind. To the director of Espadem, he writes, the threat is double. On the one hand, the house could be bought by people who could make it into a place of rendezvous, perhaps picturesque. The situation of the property and the house itself lends themselves to it. So you want to explain to me in which way this house and the situation of the house lends itself to be a brothel? It could be bought, he says, on the other hand, and that's the second threat, but people of taste that we don't know and that will perhaps have as the first instinct to cover the murals in the walls. Right? So what is this double threat, to conclude here? The brothel, precisely. The very scene of sexuality and femininity that he had tried to conquer through endless drawings. His fear is precisely that this brothel will come to life as it is projected back from the images on the walls. The murals have to be protected from the destruction and also from coming to life. Tame, domesticated, controlled, suggestive yet restrained, modest but coquette. These are not just any old images on the wall. They are his life efforts to control the threatening femininity of the material world to be a master. I'm going to leave you here with four footnotes. The first one is that in 1944, the retreating German army blew up Gray's apartment in Menton, where he had been asked to move because as a foreigner you could not be in front of the sea. And first they had vandalized E1027 and also her house in Castellar. So she lost absolutely everything. Her drawings and her plans were used to light fires. Second footnote, on August 26, 1965, the endless drawings and redrawings of the Femme de la Casbah still unfinished, Le Corbusier went down from E1027 to the sea and swam to his death. And this is the whole, the place where his body appeared, the house of Eileen Gray, the Cavanon. In 1977, a local mason who was in charge of some work in the house mistakenly demolished the mural graffiti. Now, quite aside from the fact that how do you mistakenly demolish a mural, I like to think that he did it on purpose, or they did it on purpose. Gray had spent almost 3 years living on the site in complete isolation, building the house with the masons, having lunch with them every day. He did the same thing when she built her own house in Castellar. The masons in the area knew her well. In fact, they loved her, apparently, and hated the arrogant Badovici. They understood perfectly well what the murals were about. They destroyed them. In so doing, they saw more enlightenment than most critics and historians of modern architecture. Four. Since then, the mural has been reconstructed in the house using photographs, so it somehow emerged from the original medium. The occupation continues. And very fast, I'm going to show you images of how I saw the house maybe 7 years ago, completely destroyed, occupied by squatters. The murals are pretty good, right? The house is completely abandoned. You see, the mirror is good. And the road without that leads to the house is now being named Promenade Le Corbusier because it of course it also leads to the Cavanon, which is a national monument. Thank you very much.